is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. We're live. We're on layer. Okay, going to start out with our weekly wrap for the week. And the major indices settled with relatively modest declines this week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was unchanged from prior week. The S&P 500 declined just 0.1%. The NASDAQ Composite logged a 0.7% loss. Meanwhile, the Russell 2000 underperformed, dropping 2.1%. Market participants received two inflation readings suggesting price pressures remain stubborn. Both the Consumer Price Index and the Producer Price Index for February came in hotter than expected, but stocks seemed to take this all in stride. The S&P 500 even reached a new record high on Tuesday following the hot CPI reading. This report didn't spook the market due to the motion that the largest factor in the increase in the index for shelter will lessen in coming months. The relatively muted response in the stock market was due also to the notion that the Fed's policy decision on Wednesday of this week may provide more clarity on how these reports factor into the Fed's thinking. The Treasury market had a more pronounced response to the data. The 10-year note jumped 21 basis points this week to 4.3%. The 2-year note settled 23 basis points higher at 4.72%. Other data this week included a February retail sales report that was a bit weaker than expected, but still up nicely versus the month prior month, and some initial and continuing jobless claims data that reflected ongoing strength in the labor market. The modestly negative bias in the stock market was also related to a growing sense that among some participants that stocks are due for a pullback. The S&P 500 equal weight declined 0.7% this week. Six of the 11 S&P 500 sectors logged declines. The rate-sensitive real estate sector was the worst performer by a decent margin, dropping 3.1%. Consumer discretionary sector was the next worst performer, dropping 1.2%. And meanwhile, the energy sector saw the largest gain, jumping 3.7%, and the material sector registered a 1.5% gain. So here are some summaries of the daily action. On Monday, it was a lackluster start for the week for the stock market following Friday's consolidation-related declines. There was not a lot of conviction on either side of the tape in front of Tuesday's release of the February Consumer Price Index. The Dow Jones Industrial Average eked out a 0.1% gain, as did the equal-weighted S&P, while the market cap-weighted S&P declined a 0.1%. The NASDAQ fell 0.4%. Market breadth was negative at the NASDAQ, but modestly so, and decliners were in line with advancers at the New York Stock Exchange. Ongoing settling of some of the mega-cap and semiconductor-related names acted as a limiting factor for the stock market. A loss in Boeing was related to news that the Justice Department opened a criminal probe on the door plug issue, according to the Wall Street Journal. There was no economic data of note on Monday. And on Tuesday, the stock market had a solid showing. The NASDAQ Composite was up 1.5%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 0.6% and gained more than 200 points. And the S&P 500 settled 1.1% higher at a fresh record high. Strength in the mega cap and semiconductor spaces propelled index level gains. The semiconductor index jumped 2.1%. The mega cap growth index gained 1.8%. The upside bias was also related to this February consumer price index, which wasn't necessarily in line with that what the market wanted to see. But the report failed to upend rate cut expectations as well. Core CPI was up 0.4% month over month and up 3.8% year over year. This was slightly hotter than expected, but market participants didn't seem too worried due to the understanding that the index for shelter, which is expected to lessen in the coming months, was the largest factor in this increase. The information technology sector was the best performer by a wide margin, gaining 2.5%, thanks to its mega cap constituents and its big earnings related gain in Oracle. Oracle was the top performing stock in the S&P 500. So reviewing Tuesday's data, we saw that the February NFIB small business optimism was at 89.4, a month ago at 89.9. This February CPI was up 0.4%. Prior month was up 0.3%. February's core CPI is also up 0.4%, equaling a month ago. The key takeaway from this report is that the isolated impact of the shelter index, which is expected to lessen in coming months, given the moderation in rent prices. Therefore, the market is willing to look past the deadline of disappointment for core CPI. The February Treasury budget showed a deficit of $296.3 billion compared to a deficit of $262 billion in the same period a year ago. The deficit in February resulted from outlays $567.4 billion, exceeding receipts of $271.1 billion. The Treasury budget data is not seasonally adjusted, so the February 2024 deficit cannot be compared to the January deficit of $21.9 billion. The key takeaway from this report is that the outlay for net interest in February once again exceeded the outlay for national defense, reflecting the onerous impact of higher interest rates and the increased issuance of fund to fund the government's chronic budget deficit. On Wednesday, the market had a mixed showing. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 0.1%. The Russell 2000 was up 0.3%, closed with gains, while the S&P was down 0.2%, and the NASDAQ Composite was down 0.5%. The major indices all took a quick, sharp dip in the afternoon trade with no obvious catalyst to account for the moves. The afternoon air pocket was likely related to a sell program as most sectors pulled back in unison before stabilizing. Many stocks were able to win back some of the lost ground ahead of the close. The S&P 500 equal weight registered a 0.1% gain. Consumer staples sector was also up 0.1%. Logged the slimmest gain among the seven sectors that closed higher. This price action was due in part to an earnings-related decline in Dollar Tree. So reviewing Wednesday's economic data, we saw that the weekly MBA mortgage applications index rose 7.1%, with refinance applications jumping 12% and purchase applications rising 0.5%. This is Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live. We'll be back in a moment. Thanks for being with us.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
If you're craving great tasting food and local brews in an atmosphere that's making headline news, look no further than the Newsroom Pub. Lunch or dinner, it's always a top story when you visit the Newsroom Pub. Their locally sourced menu will delight with offerings of Dutch delicacies, uniquely battered fish and chips, salads, hot pressed sandwiches, and many other pub favorites. Plus, always making the front page are their incredibly delicious smash burgers, a must try.
Hi, I'm Brandon Brink, owner-manager of the Newsroom Pub in Lincoln, but I also raise the beef used on our popular smash burgers. I invite you to visit our pub, enjoy the fresh food, decor, and design built to capture the historic charm of the old Linden Tribune.
The Newsroom's drinks are local as well, featuring craft beers, wines, and ciders. Also, the bar offers a variety of house cocktails and custom-made hard drinks. It's a headline trifecta with good brews, good food, and good news always at the Newsroom Pub. Visit them today in beautiful downtown Linden next to the mural or online at thenewsroompub.com.
Progressive presents Good News, Bad News, Dumb News, then Great News. Good news. While leaning over the fence, your neighbor said you could save money bundling home and auto insurance with Progressive. Bad news. Your neighbor leaned over a little too much and broke your fence. Dumb news. Somehow fence wood is more expensive than wood would. Great news. You decide to see if you could save money bundling at Progressive.com and to plant really tall shrubs. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers not available in all states.
Tired of hearing scary radio ads about the IRS? Tax Relief Advocates is different. TRA is here to tell you that if you owe money to the IRS, whether it's $5,000 or $500,000, we have a solution. TRA can eliminate or reduce what you owe to the IRS with zero risk to you. If we can't reduce your tax debt, then you pay nothing. We have a 5-star rating on Google and Yelp and an A+ with the BBB. End your tax nightmare today by visiting TRA.com or call 800-583-6580. That's 800-583-6580.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. We are Asset Advisors. We are located out on the Pacific Highway. That's our old Highway 99 out in the Pacific Commerce Center next to Wilson's Furniture. As you head north on the right to Ferndale, our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. Okay, we're going to continue on with this week's weekly wrap-up. And on Thursday, it was a downbeat day for the market. The S&P 500 was down 0.3%. NASDAQ Composite also down 0.3%. The Dow down 4%. And it's closed off their session lows thanks to a move higher in the last 30 minutes of trading, although it's still lagging broad-based declines. The Russell 2000 underperformed the broader market, sinking 2%. The main focus was price action in the Treasury market, which pushed yields towards their highs from February. The 2-year note yield rose 7 basis points to 4.69%. The 10-year note settled 11 basis points higher at 4.3%. That was largely in response to the February producer price index report, which was hotter than expected. Other data also contributed to the selling, including a February retail sales report that was a bit weaker than was expected, but still up nicely versus the prior month, and some initial and continuing jobless claim data that reflected ongoing strength in the labor market. Downside moves were relatively modest, despite a growing sense among some participants that the stock markets are due for a pullback. So reviewing Thursday's economic data, we saw that the February producer price index was up 0.6%. It was up 3%, up 0.3% a month ago, and February's core PPI was also up 0.3%, but a month ago was up 0.5%. The key takeaway from this report is that goods inflation drove the increase. Moreover, the PPI uptick was not will not assuage concerns about PCE inflation remaining sticky, which in the turn means that the Fed might embrace being stickier for longer with its current Fed funds rates. We saw February's retail sales also up 0.6%. Prior was revised to down 1.1 from down 0.8%, and February retail sales excluding autos were also up 0.3%. The key takeaway from this report is that the sales rebound itself, which will quiet some of the concerns about the January downturn and help the market maintain its soft landing outlook. Weekly initial jobless claims were at 209,000, and weekly continuing claims at 1.811 million. And the key takeaway from this report is that it is suggestive of a labor market that overall remains in good shape, given the low level of initial claims, a leading indicator, and much improved continuing claims number. This week's report reflects the annual revision to the weekly unemployment claims seasonal adjustment factors from 2019 forward. The January business inventories were basically unchanged. On Friday, the stock market closed this quarterly options expiration day on a downbeat note on above average volume at the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 0.5%, the S&P down 0.6%, the NASDAQ Composite down 1%. They closed with losses, but off of their lows of the day. Selling activity was particularly related to some normal consolidation efforts that left many stocks lower. The equal-weighted S&P 500 declined 0.2%, and 23 of the 30 Dow components closed lower. Still, the market was showing signs of resilience to selling efforts true to its 24 form. Sharp earnings-related declines in Jabil and Adobe contributed to the info tech sector's underperformance. So reviewing FIDE's data, we saw that the February import prices were up 0.3%. February's import prices, except for oil, were also up 0.2%. February's export prices up 0.8%. And February's export prices, excluding agriculture, were also up 0.8%. The March New York Fed Empire Manufacturing Index was down 20.9%. February's industrial production was up 0.1%. February's capacity utilization report was up 78.3%, and that was also revised again. We saw that the key takeaway from the report is the manufacturing output improved notably in February, reversing some of the decrease that was recorded in January, even though the February rebound manufacturing output remains down 0.7%. March's University of Michigan consumer sentiment preliminary reading came in at 76.5, prior was 76.9. The key takeaway from this report is the overall sentiment has shown little change so far in 2024, remains halfway between the low reached in June of 22 and pre-pandemic highs. So taking a look at the week, for the week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, as I said earlier, was flat. It still remains up 2.7% for the year. The NASDAQ was down 0.7% and remains up 6.4% for the year. The S&P 500 was down 0.1%. It's still up 7.3% for the year. And the Russell 2000 was down 2.1% and is now up 0.6% for the year. Well, let's go over here and take a little focus today. We're going to take a look at current overall financial health of households in the United States. You know, quarterly, the Federal Reserve Board of Governors releases a report officially known as the Z.1 Financial Accounts of the United States, which provides comprehensive data on the flow of funds and the level of financial assets and liabilities for various sectors of the U.S. economy. This report provides a look at the overall health of the households combined, but does not look at the households on an individual basis. So released this week, the Q4, that would be the fourth quarter of last year, report reveals that households' net worth rose to a record in 2023 as assets grew faster than liabilities. Overall, the Z.1 financial account for the United States serves as a valuable resource forecasting purposes. To offer deeper insights, let's take a look, first of all, at the balance sheet for households and nonprofit organizations. Net worth for households and nonprofit organizations hit record highs in 2023, rising 8% from 2022 to $156.2 trillion. This surge was fueled by a $12.1 trillion uptick in assets, with corporate equities leading the way, seeing a $7.85 trillion gain in market value. Additional household real estate saw a substantial increase at $2.2 trillion, and on the other hand, liabilities experienced a relatively modest rise to $559.7 billion, or 2.8%, with residential mortgages contributing $356 billion of that increase. So then let's also look at the household and owner's equity as a percent of household real estate. And then we found there that the value of household real estate has been increasing at a significantly faster rate than residential mortgages. As a result, household owners' equity as a share of their overall home assets reached 70.9% for 2023. This increase also includes in it those that own their homes outright. A reading of 70.9 represents the highest annual recording since 1960. This statistic, among many others, underscores the overall health and stability of the housing market, contrasting starkly with the conditions that led to the housing bubble in the early 2000s. So let's also go down and talk about household leverage. We find that household leverage represents represented by household liabilities as a share of the household assets, declined to 11.6% in 2023. That was down from 12.1% in the previous year. This measure experienced significant growth from 2000 until the Great Recession, reaching its peak of 19.1% in 2008 during the real estate bubble. Fortunately, the current landscape does not mirror those challenging times. Household leverage now rests at levels closer to the lowest seen since the 1970s, indicating robust and healthy household balance sheets. This is Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live here on KGMI. We're going to take a break for news. We will be back shortly. Thank you for being with us.
The Lummi Bay Market at Exit 260 is where you'll find more in the store. You'll find more in the store because there's so much store. Almost 10,000 square feet. The Lummi Bay Market is where you'll find everything you need for on and off the road. You'll find the best value on gas and diesel, along with way more than you would expect out of a convenience store. There's a liquor department featuring a great selection of your favorite competitively priced spirits, wines, and mixers. And of course, you'll want to check out the huge selection of ice-cold beer in their massive beer cave. Want to grab a quick bite for breakfast or lunch? Don't feel like cooking dinner? At the Lummi Bay Market, you'll find a great hot deli counter, including our brand new fried chicken tenders, and chicken wings with all the fixins. Make the Lummi Bay Market your first or last stop of the day for fuel, food, and more. The Lummi Bay Market, just off I-5 at Exit 260 on Rural Avenue. Open 24 hours, 7 days a week. Lummi Bay Market, where there's more in the store.
Dedicated to service, shining a light on local individuals, law enforcement, and groups giving back to our community. Brought to you by Nieder House of Luxury.
Angel, inspiration, tireless. Just a few words used to describe Shelly Larson of Fairhaven. According to Jane, Shelly's friend, our community angel Shelly routinely prepares delicious and nutritious meals for Bellingham's unhoused. And when a neighbor needs more than food, be it a ride to the clinic or a loving safe haven for a pet, Shelly is always ready to step in to help. Dedicated to Service joins Jane in recognizing a truly compassionate soul. Thank you, Shelly Larson, for your care and dedication to all our community members.
Brought to you by Nieder House of Luxury. Go see why they were voted best jewelry store in the Northwest. You'll find a beautiful selection of GIA certified and lab-grown diamonds, plus unique custom designs with an in-house jeweler. Find them at 21 Bellwether Way, Suite 107, next to Lombardi's back patio.
I had an important job, and it wasn't just a job. It was keeping my brothers and sisters safe. And coming back, it felt like kind of thrown away. If it hadn't have been for Wounded Warrior Project, I honestly don't know if I would be here. It was like, I got my family back again. We all felt the connection, like that brother and sisterhood.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Donna by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Rest easy in a cool home this summer. Contact West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical to add AC to your existing system for as little as $140 a month. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
CBS News Brief. Israel says Palestinian civilians in Rafah will be given safe routes out before a ground assault. Richard Makepeace with the medical aid for Palestinians says many won't go.
People are weak, children are weak, there are babies. People might simply be fatalistic and say they'd rather stay together as a family and die together rather than dying on the road, trying to get somewhere where they'll probably be attacked again.
Fulton County DA Fonnie Willis is staying on the Georgia election interference case. Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade not. Your CBS's Nicole Killian.
It was kind of a split decision in the sense that the judge said that in order for the district attorney to stay on the case, that Nathan Wade, the special prosecutor, must sever ties.
At least three people have been killed by tornadoes in the central U.S. This man is a business owner in Arkansas.
Most of our tax return stuff and everything else was not damaged, but there was one area that we've got wet.
CBS News Brief.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand.
Welcome back to Wealth Week, Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. Okay, well, we're in the middle of March Madness. Time to maybe place your bets. You know, the past few years have seen remarkable changes in the U.S. gambling industry, notably due to the legalization of online sports betting in select states, leading to major investments in digital platforms and industry consolidation. With March Madness approaching, we're going to delve into this rapidly growing market of online gambling. Well, sports betting has been around for decades. In 2018, the U.S. Supreme Court's repeal of the nationwide sports betting prohibition allowed states to establish their own regulations, triggering transformative partnerships and mergers that redefined the gambling industry. In fact, shortly after the 2018 judicial decision, the U.S. took the lead in global online gambling revenues in 2021, beating out more mature markets like the United Kingdom, Australia, and Germany. The U.S. online gambling's robust growth has been propelled by the surge in online sports betting. Growth has also been supported by the increased allure of online gambling convenience via smartphones and broader legal acceptance by states. And while online casinos and lotteries are estimated to grow 10% and 6% annually from 2023 through 2028, online sports betting is estimated to grow much faster at nearly 16% annually. Moreover, despite the large population, the United States currently has a user penetration rate of only 14% of online gambling, compared to United Kingdom's 27%, implying the potential for ample growth in the U.S. market. In our view, the growing rising user adoption by a younger tech-savvy generation that prefers online platforms over traditional casinos, and ongoing enhancements in offerings and user experiences to increase betting amounts, companies engaged in online gambling can scale and leverage technology may have a potential for sustainable growth over the longer term. Well, let's also take a look at the top performing sectors so far. This would be up through March 8th of this year. And this is for investors who want to drill down into the sector level and see what is performing well in the market. The S&P 500 index is comprised of 11 sectors altogether, but 126 subsectors as of March 8th, according to the S&P Dow Jones Indices. The 15 top-performing subsectors posted total returns ranging from 39.63% for semiconductors to 13.83% for metal, glass, and plastic containers. The consumer, discretionary, and industrial sectors each had three subsectors representing in the top 15 performers for a year-to-date basis. Information technology and materials each had two subsectors represented in the top 15 over this same time frame. With respect to the 11 major sectors that comprise the S&P 500 index, information technology posted the highest total return for this period, increasing 11.27% according to data from Bloomberg. The second and third best performers were communication services and financials, with total returns of 10.86% and 8% respectively. The S&P 500 index posted a total return of 7.73% over this same period of time. So as of March 8th, the most heavily weighted sector of the S&P 500 was information technology, which had weighed up 29.84% of the S&P 500, according to the S&P Dow Jones Indices. For comparisons, communication services and financial sectors weighed in at 8.83% and 12.99%, respectively. Using 2024 consensus earning estimates, the information technology and energy sectors had the highest and lowest priced earnings ratios, or PE ratios. That means information technology came in at 29.12, energy came in at 12.3%, and that's as of March 11th. For comparison, the S&P 500 index had a PE ratio of 21.28 when calculated using the 24 consensus earnings estimates as of the same date. So what are our takeaways from this? Well, information technology, communication services, and financial sectors accounted for 43.37%, 13.72%, and 11.26%, respectively, of the total S&P 500 index year-to-date through February 29th, according to data. With a total return of 11.27%, technology stocks are the top performer in the S&P 500 index through March 8th, followed closely by communication services up 10.86%. Notably, four of the 15 sectors come from the S&P 500 industrial sectors, unchanged and from our past discussion of this topic. We maintain that the sector may be reaping the benefits of renewed governmental funding in the CHIPS Act. For those investors who may have an interest, there is a growing a number of packaged products such as exchange-traded funds and S&P 500 index subsectors that are out there. Well, okay, we're also finding at the same time that Americans' financial insecurity is at a record level, according to a new survey. And these feelings of financial insecurity among Americans have reached their highest point in a decade. Third of American adults in this Northwestern Mutual's 2024 Planning and Progress survey said that they don't feel financially secure. That's up from 27% in 2023. That's the highest in the measure going back to 2012. So despite the growing economy, Americans have had to endure one financial disruption after another over the last several years, and it's hard for them to feel positive if they don't know what's around the corner. One big culprit fueling financial anxiety is a familiar one, the high cost of living. More than half of the respondents, 54%, expect price pressures to increase this year. Only 9% of their household income was outpacing inflation. About a third think inflation will stay where it is, and fewer than one in five expect it to fall in 2024. With the overall inflation rate has been decelerating, many Americans are not seeing that in their budgets. A rare bit of good news on that front came in March 8th when the Costco said in its earnings call that it was reducing prices on items including reading glasses, bottled water, battery, and frozen fruit. People's views in the broader economy were fairly grim in the survey as well, as more than half predicted a recession this year. 54% of respondents expecting that is down from the two-thirds that anticipated that in the 2030 survey. After inflation, which respondents yet ranked what could impact their finances the most, just over a third of people called government dysfunction and a third the presidential election. A potential recession was cited by 24%, market volatility by 15%, and geopolitical conflicts by 14%. These worries had more investors saying that they were playing defense, not offense, with savings and investments at 42% versus 29%, respectively, while the majority said they're focused on cutting costs and saving more. Since 59% said that they'll either spend the same amount or more this year on restaurants, vacations, and entertainment, and just 4 in 10 expected to spend less. That does make sense, given a fall in the percentage of respondents who consider themselves disciplined financial planners. The new survey found that just 45% of Americans would give themselves that label, down from 65% in 2020. The generation most likely to say that they'd engage in more discretionary spending this year was Gen Z, with some 36% of that generation expecting to increase spending, compared to 28% of millennials and 24% of Gen Xers and 20% of boomers. This study was conducted online by the Harris Poll between January 3rd and 17th among 4,588 U.S. adults. So a little FYI there. You know, I've mentioned this a couple of times before. I want to go ahead and mention it again, just because I think it's something to keep in mind. We're seeing more information come out on it on a consistent basis, and different continued rulings and information from the Internal Revenue from the U.S. Treasury. And one of the things that was part of the Secure 2.0 Act that passed was the ability. If you used a 529 plan, which is a college savings plan, something that we've used a lot with our clients over the years, You can put money away in these college savings plans. Typically this year, it's up to $18,000 that you can put away for each beneficiary. You also have a one-time benefit that you can put away in a single year of five times that amount. And then you can't put away money for another 5 years. But that money, once it's in this college savings plans, or what we call 529 plans, grows tax-free if it's used for college. And so we found 529 plans to be a very attractive platform for us to use with parents and grandparents that are saving money for college. Well, Secure 2.0 looked at the fact that in some cases there's money left over in these accounts once students finish college. Now, I'm not sure how many you're going to find in that. I know we've got quite a few of them out there, but we find most of our clients that are using them have been spending it down. But anyway, if there's a balance in that 529 plan, you now have the option to convert of using the annual limit for the IRA contributions, which, for example, let's use a $6,500 limit for somebody under age 50. They can be transferred into a Roth IRA for the same beneficiary. And this conversion program will allow each beneficiary to put away up to $35,000. Now, there are some restrictions on it that are kind of interesting. First of all, the 529 plan must have been open for at least 15 years. So that means you started it out at least 15 years ago, and then there's still money left over. Also, you can't change the beneficiary that you're putting money in, nor can you include money that you've contributed in the last 5 years or earnings. Now, we've been spending time on this. We had a recent IRS ruling come out and said that if you had not funded the conversion to the Roth for 2023, you have up until the time that you file your 23 tax return to also convert money. So that means you could convert $6,500 for 2023 and turn right back around and convert additional money for 2024. The limitation being that you cannot fund a regular IRA or a Roth yourself. You have to take money that you have in these plans, and you can't double dip, so to speak. So there are some restrictions there, but I'm bringing this up again because I think it's really important for you to be aware. Now, one caveat that I personally am concerned about here is that you also have the ability to go out and change the beneficiary of a 529 plan. So let's say that you set the account up for one of your children or grandchildren, and they used the money but didn't go to college, or didn't use it for some higher education, tech school, or what have you. One of the things that you can do is you can also go in and change the beneficiary to another family member. So if you got questions about this, you can always give me a call, 360-733-1200. This has been Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live. We'll be back shortly. Thank you for being with us.
Hello, summer? You sound so far away. Oh, you're right. Now is the time to prep for the heat while going solar or installing battery backup. Yes, I've heard it's going to get hot. With Barron's preseason cooling special, you can get a heat pump that both heats and cools when you install a solar or battery backup system. With a deal like this, there's no better time to upgrade your whole home comfort system. Yes, get a free heat pump with purchase of a solar or battery backup system. You'll stay cool and enjoy energy savings for years to come. Barron is a trusted, local, five-time award-winning clean energy company with decades of combined solar experience. They look beyond the panels to provide whole home energy solutions. Yep, right now you can get a free heat pump too. I'd call Barron today and be sure to ask about 60-month special financing. Pay no interest upon approval. Don't wait. Those hot nights are just around the corner, and this offer won't last. See you soon, summer.
Barron, your full-service HVAC, electrical, and plumbing contractor. Our mission, improving lives.
Hi, I'm Henry Winkler. My eyes are very important to me. My eyes connect me with everything I love. I loved my late father-in-law dearly. He always lit up a room, but his vision dimmed with age. He had age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. And since partnering with Apellis, I've learned there's an advanced form of dry AMD called geographic atrophy, or GA. His struggle with vision loss made me want to help others know about GA's warning signs. For some, colors appear dull or washed out. For others, hazy or blurred vision make it hard to see details, like fine print on price tags. Many have trouble seeing in the dark, making driving at night difficult. GA gets worse over time and cannot be reversed. If you think you have GA, don't wait. Treatments are available. Ask a retina specialist about FDA-approved treatments for GA and go to GAWon'tWait.com.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. As always, if you got questions for us, give us a call. 360-733-1200. And we do appreciate your listening and being here with us. Well, we had the budget proposals for the Biden administration come out here this week, and there were calls in there for sweetening tax increases on corporations and on the wealthy. And this is the opening round of a looming tax fight set to consume Washington pretty much for this next year. Congress is going to be forced into tough negotiations over the future of the tax code, with large portions of former President Donald Trump's 2017 tax cuts set to expire at the end of 2025. Many lower and middle-income households will see a tax increase if lawmakers don't act, providing the motivation for both Democrats and Republicans. Trump has vowed to push the biggest tax cuts ever if returned to power. Biden, meanwhile, is seeking higher levies on large businesses and investors while preserving some of his rivals' cuts. So here are some details of the tax proposals in Biden's budget request that was released on Monday. First of all, let's talk about capital gains taxes. The budget proposal would increase capital gains taxes to a rate equalize the taxation on investment and wage income. That would mean that capital gains for those earning at least $1 million would be taxed at a base rate of 39.6%. That's up from the current 20% level. That means that would capital gains taxes would double. He's also proposing to increase the 3.8% Medicare tax to 5% for those earning at least $400,000 in order to shore up the program's trust fund. That would mean the richest taxpayers would pay 44.6% federal tax rate on investment income and other earnings. The plan also calls for taxing assets when an owner dies, ending a benefit that allowed the unrealized appreciation to go untaxed when transferred to an heir. We call that stepped-up basis. He's talking about taking away stepped-up basis. Now, that would include such things as your house, your stocks, and any of these other things that typically, when they've passed on, they have gone on at present market value to those that inherit them. Instead of that, they would be subject to taxation. He also is proposing a billionaire's tax. Biden is proposing a 25% minimum tax rate on households worth at least $100 million, hitting many of the richest Americans who currently pay at a rate of about 8% of their incomes because of tax preferences that allow them to reduce their bills with significant tax increases. On the income tax side, he's proposing to raise the top personal income tax rate to 39.6% from 37% for those making more than $400,000. That's the higher rate would revert back to the what it was before Trump signed his tax cut law. And then corporate taxes, Trump's 2017 corporate tax cut would be get significantly rolled back, bringing a top rate to 28% from 21%. This proposal also calls for increasing U.S. taxes on companies that owe to their foreign earnings to 21%. That's double the 10.5% rate under the Trump law. The president also proposed adopting the under-tax profits rule, including the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development's global minimum tax, which would allow the U.S. to tax a company if it is paying below 15% rate in that country where it's headquartered, also applying the 15% minimum rules. Biden would also impose a 21% corporate minimum tax on domestic companies. That's an increase from the current 15%, which means that some businesses are restricted from using all of their tax breaks. And then we also saw a move to do something with carried interest. The carried interest tax break used by private equity fund managers to lower their tax bills would be eliminated under the Biden plan. Under current law, investment fund managers pay the 20% capital gains tax on a portion of their incomes that would otherwise be subject to 37% top individual income rates. This is kind of interesting because traditionally the Democrats have fought really heavily to keep this tax break because many of those hedge fund managers are Democrats. Now that's a change. Okay, we also saw the stock buyback tax. The plan would quadruple a tax on stock buybacks. It was added to the tax code in Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. The proposal to increase the rate to 4% from 1% would reduce the differential tax treatment between share repurchases and dividends and urge companies to spend money on wages or equipment. And then there's the equipment executive compensation and private jets. The proposal would deny corporate tax breaks for compensation paid to any employee that exceeds $1 million. This expands the provision in Trump's law that denied tax breaks for salaries for a narrow set of executives. Biden's plan also rolls back tax breaks for private jet travel. Last month, the IRS announced it would increase audits of private plane use by large companies and high-income taxpayers. And then we have a gay estate gift taxes. Biden calls for strengthening the tax rules governing estates and gifts, making the system more difficult for wealthy individuals and trusts to avoid taxes. Opposing more estate tax rules would mean wealthy individuals would face additional taxes on their fortunes when they die before the money is passed on to their heirs. And real estate, the budget proposal would eliminate tax breaks known as like-kind or 1031 exchanges that allow wealthy investors to avoid paying taxes on proceeds of a property sale if they reinvest those profits into real estate. And then oil and gas area, he's renewing his call to Congress to end tax incentives cherished by the oil and gas industry, including the deduction for some drilling costs, a write-off for production from marginal wells, and a tax break under which mineral right owners can claim some of the value of their oil and gas reserves removed from their property. Then there's also a child tax care credit. They would expand the child tax care credit to $3,600 for children under six and $3,000 for older children. That's up from the current $2,000. That's reverting to a more generous version Democrats passed in 2021 during the height of the COVID pandemic. The plan would also expand the earned income credit, a benefit for low-income workers, for individuals who do not have children. So those will be some of the arguing points that we're going to see them taken after us here in the next year or so. Okay, well, American paralysis and decline. You know, we can bear neither our diseases nor their remedies. So shrugged an ancient historian, Livy, of the long decline in Roman national character that in his age finally ended the Roman Republic. Like a patient whose medicine proves worse than the disease, Livy lamented that the Romans knew that they had become corrupt and lawless. But the very contemplation of the hard medicine needed for restoration and the furious reaction that would meet the remedy made it impossible to save the patient. America is reaching such an impasse. We know that no state can long exist after opening its borders to 7 million illegal aliens, requiring neither background checks nor legality. The recent murder of a Georgia female jogger by an illegal alien and the savage beating of New York policemen by similar others hardly merits media attention. Everyone knows that neither new appropriations nor new laws are needed to secure the border as it was in 2020. Instead, we could stop suicidal catch and release, deport lawbreakers, privilege the legal over the illegal immigrant, demand would-be refugees apply for asylum first in their native countries, finish the border wall, and pressure Mexico to stop undermining the territorial integrity of its northern neighbor. And then we shrug. We can't do that, paralyzed in the fear that being smeared as xenophobic, nativist, or racist. So this generation apparently feels it can endure the collateral damage of daily assaults on American citizens, the near bankruptcy of our cities, the 100,000 fentanyl deaths per year, but certainly not the idea that it is somehow not politically correct or compassionate. The same is true of the $35 trillion debt, now costing more than $1 trillion a year in interest payments and growing. We all know that it is unsustainable. Americans understand it will eventually lead to either destructive hyperinflation, suicidal remuneration of federal debt, or confiscation of private savings. Yet, we ignore the reckless spending and keep borrowing well over $1 trillion a year. Apparently, our generation prefers being praised as virtuous and caring, so it leaves the next generation to be smeared as cruel and unfair, which is forced to cut the federal entitlements and bloated and face civilization collapse. Most accept that three or four prosecutors who have either in advance promised to get Trump have proved grossly unethical. Not knowing is wrong to remove the leading presidential candidate from state ballots. Yet many shrug that this new weaponization of America's legal system is a flamboyant Trump's own problem, not their own. So they ignore the third worldization of political system. The paralysis of American society extends to our foreign policy as well. We deplore the terrorism. We're running out of time here, but most often they know when they're destroying them. They're so paralyzed, the fear of the road to salvation may become too painful to contemplate. So they implode gradually and then suddenly. Dick Donahue with you with Wolf Wake Up Live. Thanks for listening. Don't forget our show tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Have a great week. Give us a call, 360-733-1200.
Voiced on the show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.